like the switch just needed to get switched back on. You know, it took a little bit of time to switch it on, but the switch is on, in my opinion, for sure.
You are listening to EP Culture Beat, the underground source of El Paso, Texas.
Episode, our guests are recently revived El Paso rock band Two Edge. How are you guys?
I am great.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, it's Two Edge. Just yeah, we thought it was cool to put a, what was it, an umlaut on top of the U when we were kids, and yeah. And we're gonna stick to it.
Yeah, we're big fans of Husker Du, so
yeah, there it is. That's what it was too.
Cool. Yeah. So we are here with
Ben Rodriguez, guitar and sing.
Ray Adiola, and I play guitar and do a little less singing than Ben, but do some singing myself.
Gabriel Gonzalez, emotional support.
He's the most important member of the band, believe me. You know,
yeah, actually,
without emotional support, we're not.
Yeah, where would we be?
Yeah,
where would we be?
But seriously, you play bass?
I'm kind of auxiliary. I'll jump around and I'm helping helped on the first round of the new music recording and stuff like that.
Okay.
On the production side and helped out at the show.
Nice. So what's before we go into anything else, what's new with Two Edge?
That's a good question. I mean, we reformed a little bit differently. Gabe, as much as he says he's emotional support, he's actually more than that. He's like engineer producer. And so we reformed with a different, I guess, mind about approaching music. Gabe's been an old friend of ours for a long time. And I think he's known Ray since they're in the womb or something. It was just a natural fit for us to bring him in to the band as a member. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He's a producer, engineer, and it's something that we need as a band in 2023. That's probably the newest thing about us is just the way we reformed. It's not in a traditional sense. Right now, as far as band, we're writing new music. We've recorded several songs the past couple months. We just released three of them for the Punched in the Palindrome EP that we did that came out on the 23rd.
So you guys have a stash of songs, pretty much.
We have several recorded, and more we're planning on recording. We do have quite a few songs in the works.
So do you plan on releasing them as EPs, as singles, or do you want to release it as a larger body of work?
We're just kind of dipping our toes in. In the interest of time, we started with an EP. I think initially we were talking about a full length, but I mean, music has changed so much just in the way that music is being released. For us, it was important to try to get something out soon as opposed to waiting until everything was perfect to release a fuller body of work. As far as future plans, I don't know. We just have songs and we'll figure out what we do with them at that point in time.
Well, in March, you released Punched in the Palindrome. I like that title. And I guess it's like a punch to the system for people that listen to it, right? I guess that's what you guys were trying to get at, or a punch in the head, you know?
You know, it kind of organically came about. And as much as I hate using that word organic, we had scheduled a release date for 3/23. And then David said, oh, that's a palindrome.
It was actually kind of funny because, if anything, it made us all realize what the definition of a palindrome actually was. Because when Gay put that in the text, he's like, hey, that's a palindrome. I will openly admit, I went straight to Google and I'm like, okay, too. Palindrome. and then it took me a second to put 3/23/23 together. And then I'm like, hey, you know what? This is actually pretty cool. So, I mean, everything was just kind of by accident, really, at the end of the day. But it all worked out.
A palindrome is a number that's the same forwards and backwards.
Yes.
Yeah, or a word.
Yeah.
But it's really not that impressive, because I admitted to Ben that I learned it from The Simpsons. So it's really not that
high. So from The Simpsons to Gabe to Google, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how we came up with it.
It's funny because I was thinking, like, man, we got a real nerd with us. And then he's like, no, I saw it on The
So why only three songs? I get it that it could mean like just beginning, middle, end, you know?
I like the number three personally, and I think I said that when originally it was thrown out. It was like, hey, what do you guys think about doing maybe three songs? And I'm like, yeah, I'm down with that. And then, you know, it was just a matter of picking the three songs. And two of the three songs, I think we were all kind of in general understanding that those were kind of going to be the first two, which was Diamonds Become Coal and Wrecked. This whole thing also with Eric Salas, it was the 10-year, you know, anniversary of his death.
For the listeners, who's Eric?
Eric Salas was our original drummer. He passed from a brain tumor in August of 2013. So it'll be 10 years this August, August the 8th. And we did something pretty cool with Away From Me. I think Gabe would probably explain a little bit better, but at the end of the day, what we did was this is the third time that we've recorded Away From Me. That is one of the older songs. The other two are new. But we took Eric's original drum intro from the reel that we recorded at Rosewood Studios, you know, back in, you know, 90 something or whenever we did it. And Gabe took the audio off of that reel, put it on the current recording, and it blends in to the recording that we did today. It was all Gabe, and he did a great job doing it. It did justice to what we were trying to do, which was a tribute to Eric being 10 years, and it worked out. like I said, this was all Gabe's doing. How the tempos matched and all that stuff is still kind of mind boggling to me, but it all worked out at the end.
Yeah.
What was it like in general making this EP?
So Ben flies into town and he's got some ideas. And literally we sat down and we somehow, some way, these ideas came to life. I mean, is the best way that I can describe it. And the first song that was written was Diamonds. I mean, I think it took maybe an hour or two, Ben? Like literally, I mean, from the time that we sat down and we were going, what riff is what, to, hey, this works.
Yeah.
It was, you know, we got together and we jammed for maybe 1 or 2 days, I think, in September. And literally Gabe came in with his traveling studio. And at the time I thought it was pretty cool. You know, I mean, we had all the drums mic'd up and I thought this was a really good recording. And Gabe was like, no, it could be better. We did two very rough demos of a couple songs in September, Diamonds being one of them. We decided to repeat the same thing in December, except Ben had more than one idea. So Ben came in, he had some ideas, and we, next thing you know, we're treating my house, and by treating my house, I mean, we're soundproofing an entire room. I still have the packing blankets, that I eventually took down, but we basically treated my entire living room. Mic'd up the drums, did the full multi-track. There was amplifiers that were mic'd. We weren't going straight in. It wasn't all electronic, you know, as electronic as it was at the end of the day. I mean, it was still Pro Tools that Gabe was running, if I'm not mistaken, but it was a lot more involved than what we did in September. And you can hear the difference in the sound quality. I heard it on Amazon. I've heard it on Bandcamp. I've heard it on Spotify, and the production value of what we put out, I think, is the best that we have ever done. I don't think that I'd get an argument from either one of you guys on that one, right, guys?
Well, the cool thing was it was still DIY. I think actually, Rosewood was a really great studio, and I think it was on my side, anyways. The objective was to capture what these guys were all about. They're like my favorite band from El Paso from back in the day, and still are. And there's a reason for that. It was the vibe and the energy. And I really wanted to capture that. And I think the best way to do that was everyone's comfortable, chilled out in a good environment, and concentrating on creating and not so much the studio time.
It's as close to what you're going to hear live, really, at the end of the day, as it's going to get, which is, what we want to be able to do is play the stuff live. So it's very well produced in the sense that it's not overproduced, but it's not underproduced either, which is kind of, I think, our problem with all the other recordings that we did up to date. At the time, those recordings were good, you know, but obviously, you know, these were recorded in the 90s originally, you know, when the last time that we all three of us were in the same studio together. So
I think one of the things that was refreshing as far as working with Gabe is that he understood us just as well as we did. I think that made it a lot easier just in general, because as far as tones and stuff, you know, I mean, I trust him. It's like, you know, it's going to sound good. And he was very much a part of this, of the whole process and just how we approached it. Gabe calls them guerrilla sessions. And the first time that we got in September, we had talked about recording, and I told Gabe, I was like, yeah, well, for this, I just want to do like kind of something for like Instagram just so we can have some stuff. And he came with like minimal equipment, thinking that we were just kind of, wasn't that right, Gabe? Like, you just thought it was going to be kind of like demo-ish kind of thing?
Yeah, I thought it was just for like a quick, like 10-second Instagram something or other. And so, yeah.
I wanted to release it as it was because I thought it sounded amazing. I was like, this is fantastic. And Gabe's like, yeah, I brought like half the equipment I normally would have, you know?
Exactly.
So, like, I'm hearing something amazing, and Gabe's like, yeah, you know, we could have done a lot better. And so, he's like,
these are scratch tracks.
Yeah, it was, but I mean, it's crazy because now in retrospect, I definitely know what Gabe was talking about when he's like, no, we can definitely do better.
Did it take a while for you guys to get back into that playing groove?
I don't know, about 20 minutes maybe.
It probably took a little bit longer than 20. But that was because of me. I was more than anything, it was a bit of a process. I mean, there was already a familiarity, obviously, but I think it, especially just not having played together in so long, and it came together pretty quickly. It had to, because we had 3 days to write and then record on that third day, and so it was very intense and fast paced.
It came together pretty quickly. I mean, honestly, I mean, is the reality of it? You know, literally 3 days. It wasn't like it was 3 days of us, you know, renting an Airbnb, you know, on the West Coast, where all we were going to do was sit around and work on a record. I mean, Ben was in town, but then, like, you know, Sam still had to work. You know, I took as much time as I could, you know, during those times to get things done. So it's not like we were working 24/7, but we worked enough to lay down. I mean, I think we recorded a total of like 8 tracks or something like that, or 6 tracks, for the amount of stuff that we got done and the amount of time that we got it done. I'm not going to say it was easy. It did come quicker than it should have, in my opinion. But I think I joke around about this, but at the same time, I don't. We were basically raised at Eric's house when we were kids. I mean, we spent literally 5 to 7 days at Eric's house rehearsing, you know, and it was, you know, 3 hours, you know, if it was, I think there was a Christmas break where we rehearsed every day during Christmas break. We were like there at 10 a.m. every day, you know, so I can't say that all of that work that we put in way back in the day didn't definitely help the situation that we put ourselves in. Every chance that we could rehearse, we would rehearse. So, you know, I mean, granted, you know, 20 plus years later, you know, here we are trying to do it again. And I know that because we put in so much time back in the day, it certainly helped launch this into at least get it going again. It's really kind of funny because we started jamming. We suddenly were looking each other, just literally looking at each other for cues, like just like we did back in the day. I mean, like the switch just needed to get switched back on. You know, it took a little bit of time to switch it on, but the switch is on, in my opinion, for sure.
So who handled lyrics?
Is that that's like all Ben.
Ben?
Yeah, especially on all the new stuff. Yeah, that's all Ben.
So lyrics, and you also had to sing again. How did that feel, man?
Look, he lost his voice already.
You want to play in a band, you don't have a choice. It's just kind of...
Well, do you want to play in a band? You know, you're going to have to play and sing.
The speed or the slowness of it coming together was more me, because I had to really relearn everything, and I'm kind of slow to learn things. So there's that process going through. And then as far as the new stuff being written, the way technology is, you can lay down a guitar track and not even have to learn it. And then you can like loop it and add tracks and then vocals. And so the challenge for me was relearning the songs and then learning how to sing and play them at the same time, because I didn't write them at the same time. So that was a bit of a challenge for me. Initially, it was just trying to learn how to sing and play the new stuff, as opposed to like the old stuff. I amazingly, to me, I remembered all the lyrics. I didn't have to go back and listen to stuff. I remembered all the lyrics of what we were doing. Music, not at all. I didn't remember anything. I like, Ray, how did this one go? And so he was very, since he remembers everything that not only he plays, but that I play and Sam plays, you know, he's like our musical Google, like Ray, you know.
We all have what we do in this band. It really is a group effort, without a doubt. At the end of the day, everybody's got their role to play, and everybody plays it, you know, and just like we used to, you know. It's just a lot of fun, you know, at least for me, to be back and, you know, to be back making music with these guys and playing the old stuff.
So what prompted the reunion, the two-edge revival?
Man,
my wife passed away. I had stopped playing music for over 20 years. And so I was encouraged by my best friend and Ray to start playing again. So I started playing again. I bought another guitar. Ray encouraged me to start recording. And so I went and got some stuff to record. And then I had shared some stuff with Ray, you know, with the idea of working together with him, not as two edge, but doing something new, something different, not necessarily musically, but just different as far as a name and a band. And I started sending him stuff, and then he brought up putting together two edge again. Because Eric's anniversary was going to be happening this year, and he thought it would be a good idea to, you know, play a show and do something for Eric. And initially, I didn't want to do Two Edge again, but with that, it seemed like the right thing to do, and so that's how I got on board with the idea, and with that, started the writing of new songs, and it just kind of regrew into us playing together again. But initially the catalyst of reforming Two Edge was solely because of Eric and just us wanting to honor him. It happened a lot sooner than we, I think, had originally planned. I think originally planned in September or August or something like that. But it turned out in March, and it moved along really quickly. And it was a great experience. You know, we'd visited his Eric's family, and we'd gotten their blessing, and you know, it was it felt like we were doing something. You know, music, I think art in itself is a very selfish thing, but for this, it felt like a very selfless thing, because our intention, our motivation wasn't ourselves. It wasn't selfish ambition. It was, you know, honoring our friend and his family. And so it became something different to all of us in our hearts. You know, Gabe was very close with Eric also. He played with Eric, and so it was very much a common thread, you know, with all of us. And, you know, Eric meant something to us, and, you know, we just wanted to do the best that we could in presenting ourselves, representing ourselves.
So who's currently in the band? It's Ben, Ray. So it's only half original members, or?
It's Ben, Ray, Sam, and Gabe.
So Sam is not here on the interview.
Yeah, we're missing Sam today. Sam Dayub is our bass player. And that was like another thing too. You know, when Ben was like, hey, you know, I've got these ideas, and it was insane because, you know, he sends me these tracks, and I'm listening to him, and I'm like, Ben, like it's really Ben. It, like, I mean, I'm talking about the music, I'm talking about the lyrics, I'm talking about the melodies. It was really, really awesome to hear him back at it. And it was one of those deals where it's like, if Ben and I are going to do something, you know, the first person that we're going to call is Sam, yeah. You know, I mean, it's like, it's just one of those deals. Like, I mean, you know, who else are we going to call? Sam and I, when we were sophomores in high school, we started playing together. And then shortly after that, you know, we started playing with Ben. And then shortly after that, it was Ben, Salas, you know, Sam and myself. That's what Two Edge was. You know, we went through, you know, Eric left the band after a while, you know, the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, I think, we played with Tony Ojar on drums. But throughout the whole thing, you know, I mean, we were all still close and we were all still friends. It just felt right on so many levels with the lineup that we have right now being us four. And then on this record, you know, we tapped Christian Holst to play drums with us. That was another one of those there were too many reasons to use him specifically because, you know, he goes way back to, you know, our days, you know, way back at the very start as well. He's continued to play. He's, you know, the drummer in X Minus One, another local band, where he plays with David Goldman on violin and stuff, and they got a great thing going on. It's kind of a jazz fusion thing. But yeah, Chris it was just kind of one of those that made too much sense as well. We all go back to to the same times, this, you know, the same core. We're all old school bros, really, at the end of the day.
You guys got a lot done in a short amount of time this past first chunk of the year, you know? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You guys did an EP. You guys released it. You played live. You were on the television, you know?
I know. I joked around. I'm like, look, Mom, I'm on the news, and it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Because there was a point in my life where if you saw me on the news, it probably wasn't going to be a good thing. But
you guys have a sticker in the punk rock Hall of Fame now?
Oh, yeah. I just saw
Fat Mike taking pictures and stuff in front of, I guess it was like the ribbon cutting this week.
Awesome. Hold on, I think I told you, Ben. We are actually, Two Edge is in the Punk Rock Hall of Fame in Las Vegas by default. But we're in the Punk Rock Hall of Fame. Basically, what happened was Ed Ivy of the Rhythm Pigs, local legend Ed Ivy, they inducted the Rhythm Pigs into the Las Vegas Punk Rock Hall of Fame. Fat Mike is involved in it, like Dave just mentioned. And they've got one of Ed Ivy's bases either going up or on display or something along those lines at the Punk Rock Hall of Fame. And on that base, there's a Two Edge. There's flyers. There's different flyers on the base. And one of the flyers that's up there is Two Edge. I think it's the UK Subs. When we played with the UK Subs, it could dance.
There's two different ones that are on that base. So we're on there twice. We're like near the volume knob with the UK Subs, I think. And
like on the back or something?
Yeah, and then the other one's with Rhythm Pigs, and I don't remember who else. But yeah. So it's actually on there twice.
So you guys even snuck into Hall of Fame. So come on.
Yeah. It was really funny. and it's crazy because I knew that this had been in the works for a while. Yeah, and Mike Moshfolder, another local guy who also plays in bands, he plays in Brother Strange and Ohomalo. He was involved in restoring the bass and putting it together and things of that nature. And he informed me, he's like, "Hey, by the way, Ed Ivy's bass is going up at the Punk Rock Hall of Fame." I'm like, "Hey, that's pretty cool." And then I saw the bass and I'm like, "Oh my God, there's two Ed's flyers on it."
Dang.
So it was pretty cool for sure.
When and how did the band start? How did Two Edge start?
Two Edge started, like I was saying earlier, I met Sam when we were sophomores in high school, and we started playing at his parents' garage in 113 degree El Paso summers with the doors closed because you don't want to disturb the neighbors. And soon enough, we met Ben. I don't remember the exact circumstance on how Ben joined the band, but shortly after that, Eric Salas joined the band. We were, I want to say, maybe juniors, or maybe, I think we were probably still sophomores. 89, 90 was, by the time that we were Two Edge, By the time that we were seniors in high school, we were already doing tours, as mindless tours as they were, like, driving from here to Olympia, Washington to play one show and hoping to catch one on the way down in Portland with our fingers crossed. We were in high school already doing these kind of things.
Wow.
And then shortly out of high school, we did the longest one that we did, which was 6 weeks on the road. That was when we played with The Offspring and Guttermouth at the Galaxy Club in Dallas.
We did the Southwest with Ed Hall from Austin.
Ed Hall. Yeah. Back to Gabe when we were younger. Gabe played in a band called Spindrift. We played together a lot when we were kids. But when we graduated, Spindrift ended up moving to Austin. So they were, playing Austin, having a good time. And it worked out for us because we could just go to Austin and play and stay with the guys from Spindrift. And, it was a kick-ass weekend, and we got to play our music and, life was good. It was crazy because we were even looking at some video when we were putting all the stuff together for Eric. There's some video of Ben and I on stage playing with Spindrift, doing Spindrift songs. The camaraderie definitely goes very, very far back, even with the choice of Chris using him on drums even that was, you know, also part of that same crew and people that we all used to all run with.
What's the proudest moment you shared as a band during those early years?
The proudest moment?
I think that was surviving for tour for me.
You know what? Honestly, the fact that we survived that 6-week tour and straight up that we didn't die. there was, in retrospect, more than a couple occasions that we literally got by, by the skin of our teeth, near what would have been horrible wrecks, to start with, just being young and dumb and unsupervised and traveling the world. I think I'd have to agree with Ben that I think the proudest moment as a band is that we're still here being able to talk about it, to a certain degree.
So how often did you guys play here and tour then? It sounds like you guys did it a lot.
We played a fair amount of shows. The one that I always bring up that everybody always looks at me with a stupid face is we opened up for Rancid at St. Pius Church. That was really cool. Yeah, the Operation Ivy had just broken up. Rancid had just literally had just launched. And I remember getting the call from Ben. I was in my mom's house. The phone rang way before cells. And sitting there on the phone. And he's like, hey, there's a band called Rancid. It's the guys from Operation Ivy. They're playing in St. Pius. We opened up for them. So that was literally, I think Ben, if I remember correctly, I think you called me the day out. And it was like, hey, Rancid's playing in St. Pius and we're opening up for him. Yeah, cool. When? And it was like, get your shit. It's like now.
My memory on a lot of stuff is really blurry.
But yeah. We played with DRI at the Coliseum. We played with Agent Orange at the Nile Theater in Mesa, Arizona, which was an unbelievably killer show. The Offspring and Guttermouth and Deep Ellum, back in the day, Sprawl and, Buffon Jellyfish. We were just talking about all those bands when we did this deal on Thursday. There was a lot of filler bands, in the Southwest that we had the privilege of hanging out with and becoming friends with and playing with, and had the privilege of opening up for, some national acts too.
That's cool. And can you sum up your recording output during this time? Like, did you guys put out cassettes? Did you guys put out vinyl or?
We did a split 7-inch vinyl with Scapegoat, but we never put anything out in the way of CDs. We had a lot of recordings that we never ever released that we had plans to. But we just never did. And so, yeah, but as far as like what we had done prior to this recent EP is just 2 demo tapes and a split 7-inch, plus the additional recordings that we have that we never released. There was quite a bit of that.
There's also one that you missed, Ben. We were on a CD. Remember the Texas compilation?
Yeah.
There was a CD that came out of College Station, if I remember correctly. And it was a compilation of a bunch of Texas indie bands. We recorded at Rosewood, and they put everything, they put it all out. So I think we just either send them a reel or send them a copy or something. And when they put that out, they put it out on CD. And at the time, I mean, at least I was like, dude, we're on a CD.
Absolutely.
It was kind of cool at the time. That was the one time that we did do something on a CD for the most part. Oh, and the 710, the 710 Texas.
Hold on. Speaking to the CD though, on the Texas comp, for me, it was a really big honor to be on that because some of my favorite bands from Texas were on there. Glorium, Gut, Multitude of the Slothful from Las Cruces. So I felt like that was a really proud moment for me because we were with bands that I looked up to, but we were nothing like. And so it was just kind of nice to be included in that, in that family of basically noise jazz core bands,
that's badass.
Yeah. And And it was a really good time. It was nice because we did tour Texas a lot, and you know, we'd go out and play with our friends, and it was a nice time.
It sounds like a different time for sure, because you guys were just a playing machine, you know, like play locally and then you're playing nationally.
Yeah. Ben was basically the guy that made the phone calls and, you know, booked these tours with, you know, with the connections that we would make with certain bands that would come through. I mean, you want to talk about a different time. This was before email. This was before, you know, literally it was one of those, you want to book a show in Phoenix, you need money to make that long distance phone call because you can't just pick up your cell and call somebody in Phoenix.
And the Phoenix phone book.
That too. And yeah, it's funny that you say that. There was no GPS maps. There was none of that shit, you know? So you pulled into a city, and that was the first thing that you did. You walked over the phone book and you tried to figure out where you were and where you were going. Phone books were very useful at one point.
Right.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. But, you know, today, right now, I mean, it's more challenging on a different level, not on the level that we were challenged at. You know, the challenges that we faced was if you wanted to record, you had two spots to go to. It was Rosewood or Tornillo. You want a tour, then, yeah, you needed the long distance money, the long distance phone call money and everything else and all that. Now, I think it's more of a, there's a lot more competition than there was back then because of the ability to record in your living room the way that we did, you know, the ability to communicate via emails and, you know, Messenger and Instagram and social media. You know, there's a lot of different avenues to get from point A to point B that weren't available, you know, back when we were doing it. But at the same time, you know, it's also kind of leveled the playing field for everybody. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's, you know, we used to joke around back in the day. It's like, you know, you'd watch Wayne's World and it's like, you know, if you can only get on that one right show that would focus your, you know, that would focus, you know, if the news did a story on you, you know, everybody would go, you know, nutballs over the whole thing, you know. Now it's there's a lot more bands, and it's a good thing because at the end of it, I think it's gonna end up at a spot where it's genuinely just art for what the art is worth, and then you bring in what TikTok has done for attention spans of people, and you know, I'm starting to really buy Ben's approach of anything over 3.5 minutes is too long. And I think anything over 15 seconds at this point is too long. So, so yeah, I guess we'll stick to 3.5, right, Ben?
Yeah, I'm happy with that. If it's really good, it can go to 4. But there's some great. Right. We're not merciless.
3:30 was the length of you guys' songs, all three of those songs almost, on the new ones.
Really?
They're each about 3:30.
You know, and all I can say is that wasn't done on purpose by any means. I think we did a pretty good job, you know, on the arrangement with these songs where they're the right length. At least we all agree.
So what made you guys bring the band to a halt in the first place?
Basically what happened was that let's just say the band broke up and half of the band became the first version of At the Drive-In.
Yeah, I mean, I was an asshole.
Shit happens. Shit happens, man, you know. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, this shit happened in, you know, what, 90, what did we say? What was it, 98, 97?
96 our last show.
96 was when we played our last show. You know, it wasn't too long after that, by the time that Ben and I had, you know, had spoken, and bygones were bygones at that point. But yeah, basically, the band broke up and half of the band, you know, became that version of At the Drive-In.
Did you guys stay in contact through the years?
No, Ben was kind of incognito, for quite some time. And then basically going back to the Eric thing, when Eric passed, I managed to get a number for Ben, and you know, we started talking. And then, you know, a couple years ago, you know, he went through what he went through, and started talking more focused on the music, not just, you know, how are you doing. That basically just kind of opened the floodgates, so to speak. So, I mean, as tragic as it might sound, I mean, when you really break it down, it was, you know, it was really kind of Eric's death that really made this whole thing kind of come together.
Yeah.
So for those curious, they can find a Bandcamp link to the band's early material and your link tree on Instagram. It's a 11 track compilation. And speaking as a person that's played in a lot of bands too, like, it's nice to have something like that archived from your past, right?
Yes. This guy, he did a deep dive on At the Drive-In, and in doing that, he came across a bunch of old El Paso flyers that had Two Edge on it. So he started doing a deep dive on Two Edge. One day I had gotten a link to the Bandcamp. I thought maybe Ray or Sam had put those songs up. And so I had sent Ray the link, and I asked him, you know, did you put this up? He's like, no. And I was like, Sam? He said, no. So we didn't know who did it. And so it was a really big mystery to us, because I don't think any of us held on to any of like the old Two Edge songs. At least I know I didn't. I didn't have anything from Two Edge, you know, on tape or CD or any of that stuff. And so it was just kind of a mystery, like who could have gotten those songs compiled like that and put them up. And it turns out that it was we ended up reaching out through that Bandcamp that the person had put together. We emailed him, and his name is Mark Kennedy, and he spent countless hours just trying to find stuff on the band. And so, yeah, he put all those songs up. He's getting stuff from Chicago, all over the place. To me, it was very humbling, because just the fact that anybody would go through those kinds of efforts and jump through those kind of hoops to do something like that for people that they don't even know. I mean, that's something like, you know, your brother might do for you or you know, somebody that knows you. But for somebody that doesn't even know you, that's never met you and that you've never met, to go through all these efforts, it was very humbling for me. And it was impressive.
That's cool. Yeah,
that's how that whole thing came up. Yeah. And it was just a mystery to us. It was really neat, you know, because you'd expect that from a band member, you know, like, hey, I'm going to put up my songs, you know, but it wasn't like that. You know, we started finding other videos or YouTube things with old demos and people that put up songs. So it was really neat to see that. It was nice to see that.
That's cool. And speaking of archiving, you know, I found your guys's split 7-inch with Scapegoat at a local thrift store, you know. And so with the help of a friend, we converted it to digital and we threw it onto the EP Culture Beat YouTube channel.
Yes.
Part of our local music preservation project. And, you know,
that's awesome.
What's crazy is that 4 years later, I'm speaking with you guys about it, about the band's resurrection.
It was four years ago that you posted that up.
Yeah.
What's really interesting about that 7-inch, I hated the cover. I hated the idea. I was like, what the F, man? Freaking baby. Like, seriously? And well, it turns out that it's Tito Lariva's daughter. And her name is Lola. And so Tito Lariva is from El Paso, and he played in early punk band The Plugs, Los Cruzados, and he was in Dusk Till Dawn. You know, I mean, he's an El Paso legend. And I mean, The Plugs played with the Germs. I mean, they were at the forefront of punk music, and you know, he was from El Paso. And after learning these things, I was like, okay, I get it. But at the time, I was just like, what the heck, man?
Like, I don't like it.
Yeah, but yeah, it's an interesting piece of El Paso history that we were a part of that I didn't realize was taking place as it was taking place. I didn't understand the significance of.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
If I could just add one thing to that 7-inch, Nowhere to Stand was number one on KRUX's playlist for a second.
Nice.
Or something like that. On college radio.
Any advice for bands, for musicians listening?
Don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you just know what? Kidding. No. This is not a message for musicians. It's a message for musicians' loved ones. Stay away from a musician. Seriously. They're selfish people. Like, do yourself a favor. I mean, like, bottom line, don't, like, mama, don't let your babies date cowboys. Well, don't let them date musicians either. I mean, like.
No, all in all, yeah, don't do it. But if you're going to do it, just practice your ass off, man. Just practice your ass off. That's all there is to it.
Where can folks find your music?
Any streaming service has got it. Two Edge, just type in Two Edge, TUIEDGE, two words, Punch in the Palindrome. It's up on Bandcamp. It's up on Amazon, Spotify, you name it. It's up.
Social media?
Take a listen to it. Yeah, we check us out on Instagram. Instagram, really.
Cool. Go to those links. And also, you guys have T-shirts available. How can people get those?
We have a merch link on the Linktree. Merch can be reached through there.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Thank you for your interest in even interviewing us. We appreciate it. We're very grateful. Thank you.
Definitely. Thanks for being on the show, guys.
And thank you for putting up that 7-inch.
Oh, yeah. Welcome. You're welcome. Thank you. Seriously, thank you for being on the show. It was great talking to you guys. And I hope
appreciate you.
I hope you guys continue to make more music.
Thank you, Miguel.
That's the plan. Thanks again.